Okay. So let's see where we got up to here. If you remember, we started at the end of the last shiur at the bottom of Hey Amid Aleph, going on to the top of Hey Amid Beis. Tani Tana Kame de Rabbi Yochanan. So there was a braisa that was brought in front of the Rabbi Yochanan. Kol ha'osek b'Torah u'b'gemilas chasadim v'kover as bonav, going on to Hey Amid Beis, is mochlin lo al kol avanosav. So there are three things here. We're not sure if you need all three. That was the last question we left hanging. Or any one of these in and of itself would be enough to engender a complete total mechila for all one's sins. And there seems to be a very strong school of thought that would take the first two and combine them and leave the third one as a separate entity, meaning Torah and Gemilas Chasadim work together in tandem, and they engender kapara on all his avonos. And alternatively, to the same extent, Kover Esbonov would also, in and of itself, independent of the other two, engender a complete kapara. Where do we know this from? Dichsiv, the pasuk in Mishlei, Bechesed, the MS Yechupar Avon. So this is Rabbi Yochanan's response to the Chacham who brought him this brisa. He says, Bishlema Torah Gemilas Chasadim, I could derive it from the Pasuk Tichsiv Bechesed V'Emes Yechupar Avon. Meaning, if you have both Chesed and Emes, you have both Torah and Gemilas Chasadim, that will engender Kapar for his Avonos. And then he's going to say, in a minute, Elakover Esbonov Minayin, and then we're going to need a new source, which we'll see is the Gzeres Shav of Avon Avon, to establish that Kover Esbonov engenders a Kapar Savonos. But now, Rabbi Yochanan, in his presentation, his analysis of this Braisa, and Alocha of Torah Gmils Chasadim Mochlono Avonosov, he wants to know, where do we see it in this Pasuk in Mishlei? And it's very interesting because when you get to the word chesed, you assume that chesed is chesed. So what's the big deal? Why does Rabbi Yochanan feel compelled to quote another pasuk in Mishlei to prove that the word chesed in the first pasuk in Mishlei refers to chesed? But the answer is that there are two meanings to the word chesed. Chesed has two, could mean two different things. Chesed could mean tzedakah, when I give money, because if I give money, that's a great chesed. And chesed could also mean gemilas chasadim. Gemilas chasadim is not something that you do with your money, but rather something that you do with your guf, with your body. For example, a classical case of gemilas chasadim would be bikur cholim, you go to visit the sick, hachnasas archim, you go to, you host someone.
What about the chesed that you don't expect to be repaid or you're not going to be repaid?
Right, then there's another chesed, chesed shel emes. That's also gemilas chasadim, but that's the gemilas chasadim on the highest level. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan wants to know. He's analyzing the pasuk, b'chesed v'emes yechupar avon. What does this word chesed mean? Does it mean what it normally means, generally, or does it take on a different meaning? Meaning, if I interpreted the word chesed literally, I would say it's not a reference to gemilas chasadim, I would assume it's a reference to tzedakah, to giving money. Says Rabbi Yochanan, no. The word chesed in this context in Mishlei does not mean giving, parting with one's money and making a contribution to the poor. But what it means is gemilas chasadim. Gemilas chasadim, as we said before, is something that you do with your guf. And that gemilas chasadim is even greater than tzedakah. And one of the features or the expressions of the greatness of the unique status of gemilas chasadim above and beyond tzedakah is the fact that it engenders kapara for one's avonos. So now Rabbi Yochanan says, I'm compelled to quote some sort of source to establish that the word chesed in this particular pasuk in Mishlei refers to gemilas chasadim. And that's the very next pasuk. It says there, Shenemar rodef tzedakah v'chesed yimtza chayim tzedakah v'chavot. Notice, and this is what Rabbi Yochanan wants to emphasize, that tzedakah is mentioned in this pasuk, and following tzedakah it says chesed. What conclusion do you derive from the fact that the pasuk, which was again authored by Shlomo Melech, uses both terminologies, both words, tzedakah and chesed? What conclusion do you derive from that? That they're different. You know, if he's just repeating himself to be poetic, you know, poetic license, that doesn't satisfy the rational mind. So therefore, we're more inclined to think that from the fact that Shlomo Melech speaks about tzedakah and chesed as two separate terms, as two separate entities, then the word chesed here in this context is referring to gemilas chasadim rather than tzedakah. Then Rabbi Yochanan goes on. The pasuk says v'yemes. What does the word emes mean? Emes means truth. How do I know that emes here is a reference to Torah? Because keep in mind, the Braisa is establishing that both Torah and Chesed, in this case, Gemilas Chasadim, will engender Kapara. Emes zu Torah, I'll prove it to you, Shenemar, there in the same context. It says, Emes knei v'al timkar. Which means you should purchase emes. If the only way you can get emes, which we'll soon see is Torah, then yeah, is by buying it, meaning there's no one who's willing to teach you Torah gratis. You know, it would be nice if, you know, we could send our children to yeshivas free of charge. In America today, this is a big, big issue. Because the tuition in America for yeshivas has risen. It's beyond belief. It's like on a, you know, if I gave a microcosm, a small scale, it's like buying shmurimats, a hand shmurimats. You know, to buy three hand shmurimats is, you know, you go into hak. But multiply that by 1,000 times and imagine what tuition is costing in America. So people are racking their brains trying to figure out how to, you know, reduce tuition for yeshiva students. I'm talking about high schools. I mean, I had a parent who cried to me that because he's sending three of his children to high schools, yeshiva high schools, he's got to make about $70,000 in an annual income just to send them through yeshiva education.
More than that.
No, that's after tax.
That's after tax. More than that. So in any event, the pasuk here, Mishlei, tells me, emes knei, you know, if need be, you know, pay for Torah. Now, what's the al timkar? What does it mean, don't sell it? So here there's a very interesting pshat in Rashi on Mishlei. It's not here in the Gemara, but Rashi in Mishlei says the following. What happens if in order to learn Torah, I have to pay? I have to pay a salary to the Rebbe. I can't find anyone who's willing to teach me gratis. Now, I have received Torah from him. I want to transmit the Torah to the next generation. So do I have a right to say, well, look, I paid for my education. Let my students pay for their education. And the answer is no. The al timkar. Even though you had to buy the Torah that you received, don't transmit it and say, I want to sell the Torah and I want to be paid for my Torah study. Despite the fact that you had to pay, you have to rise above yourself and be willing to teach Torah gratis without getting paid.
That begs the question, what about the person who taught you? Why didn't he teach you gratis? He learned from his rabbi. I mean,
that's his problem. I have no choice. You know, he's the only one out there who can teach me Torah, and he insists that I pay him. So even though if I had another option, I would certainly take advantage of the other option, avail myself of someone who's willing to pay and teach me gratis. But I'm out there in Noahsville, and no one's willing to teach me. So the pasuk says, and the Rambam quotes this in Hilchos Talmud Torah, that if you can't find anyone to teach you gratis, pay him. Emes knei. You have no choice.
No, I'm looking at the last part of the pasuk. Are we saying that those people that charge, that get paid for giving over Torah, they're going against this Gemara?
Correct. They're not against this Gemara. That's a different Gemara. The Gemara in Kiddushin derives from Moshe Rabbeinu. It says, Ma'ani b'chinam afata b'chinam. That just like Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah from Hashem b'chinam, so too he taught Torah b'chinam. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu sets up for us the paradigm of how we have to teach Torah. V'shinantam levanech elu talmidecha. And we can't charge for that. You'll ask me, how is it that we charge, you know, tuition? So the Rambam doesn't have really an answer to that question. The other poskim came up with answers, but again, it's a whole long discussion how they circumvent the law. But technically speaking, in the pure, you know, in the pure theoretical conceptual law, in abstract terms, you're not allowed to take money for teaching Torah. We have to find some excuse that, you know, I'm not being paid for this, I'm being paid for that. You know, all the, you're familiar with all the heterim, you know, what they call schar batol, etc., etc. But in terms of teaching Torah, so now, I intuitively would like to say, look, if I had to pay for my Torah education, you want to learn Torah from me, you pay for your education. And the pasuk says, v'al timkar. But getting back to Masechta Brachas, that's already Masechta Kiddushin and the Sugyas of Talmud Torah. What the Gemara wants to establish, Rabbi Yochanan proves from this pasuk, that the word emes, in the context of Mishle, is a reference to Torah. So we have chesed v'emes yichupar avon, and that's very good. In any event, the pshat that I presented to you is the pshat of the Re'af, who I mentioned many times, his name was Pinto, in the Ein Yaakov. But also on the same page in the Ein Yaakov, there's another commentary called the Eitz Yosef. And he says just the opposite. He says that the chesed that's referred to in this Braisa and in this pasuk in Mishle, which is called Gemilus Chasadim, is chesed sha'adam ose b'mamono. It's different than staka. Staka is when I give you an outright gift. Chesed is when I extend a loan to you. Why is extending a loan superior to outright charity? I mean, after all, if I extend you a loan, you're going to have to pay me back. You would say that falls short of staka.
Self-respect.
Correct. The highest level of tzedakah, that's what the Rambam has in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, in the last parak, he has 8 levels of tzedakah. The highest level of tzedakah is when I can encourage you through my tzedakah to stand independently on your own 2 feet. Umach achicha, it says at the end of it says v'zachta v'yado at the end of Sefer Yikra. So that he can stand on his own 2 feet. So a person comes to me and he says, I need a loan because I have a very unique opportunity to make a business investment, and then I can stand on my own 2 feet independent. I can create a company of my own. That's the greatest mitzvah of tzedakah, and it's called in this Gemara chesed according to the Eitz Yosef. By the way, since we're mentioning the Eitz Yosef, he also indicates that when the pasuk says, that was the second pasuk that Rabbi Yochanan quoted as a proof text, it says rodef tzedakah v'chesed. He assumes that for the fact that the pasuk combines tzedakah and chesed together in one breath, there must be some very similar common denominator to the two. This is the exact opposite of the methodology of the Re'af. The Re'af understood that from the fact that the pasuk says tzedakah v'chesed, it's coming to teach us that tzedakah and chesed are two totally different entities. The entity of tzedakah is monetary help. The entity of chesed is physical help. Says the Eitz Yosef, the methodology is just, as we say in Yiddish, punktfakir, the exact opposite. That from the fact that he combines tzedakah v'chesed, maybe he's reading the vav of v'chesed as a vav ha-mechaber, it means that there's a very similar commonality to both tzedakah and chesed, because they both apply to one's money, to one's mama. Good. Ella now, frekt Rabbi Yochanan, kover es bonav minayin. What's the source that if a person loses a child, Rachman Hatzlan, then he achieves total kaparas avonos? The pasuk is only referring to chesed v'emes yichupar avon. And the answer is that we have to introduce here gzeirah shava, the word avon, which is at the end of this phrase in Mishle, is also the word that's used by Yirmiyahu HaNavi to refer to someone who lost a child. Tanale Ahu Saba. So there was an elder statesman who explained to Rabbi Yochanan this braisa, and he quotes Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So we're going really back now to the Tanoim. Asya Avon Avon. We have Gzeir Shava. Ksiv Hacha here in Mishle, it says, Bechesed V'emes Yichubar Avon. Uksiv Hasam, it says there in Yirmiyahu HaNavi, Umishalem Avon Avos Elcheik B'neim. Very strange, because why does the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai have to stretch his arm all the way out to Yirmiyahu HaNavi when the pasuk in Chumash says Avon Avos Albanim? The word Avon in the context of losing a child is in the Chumash itself. He doesn't have to stretch his arm all the way out to Yirmiyahu HaNavi. But let's put that question on the side for just one moment. The pasuk says Umishalem avon avos el cheik b'nehem, which means that the children perish on behalf of their parents, on behalf of their forefathers. What does it mean? It means that the death of the child engenders a kapara for the sins of the father. The father himself sinned, and he gains kapara through the death of the child. Obviously, there's a philosophical, or as we call it, a theological question to be raised here. Why should the children die as a result of the sins of their parents? And basically, I saw in the Mefarshim two approaches. One approach has to do with Gilgal Neshamas, which I have no access to. I cannot help you with this transmigration of souls. The other approach is that when a child is very young, his combination of neshama and guf, his entity, is still not formed, it's not matured. And at this point, he, in his youth, he's an extension of his parents. He doesn't have, so to speak, a personality or an identity of his own. Right, exactly. So why doesn't the Gemara quote this pasuk of Pokei Novo and Al Avos? So that we'll get to in just a minute. And that's the insight here that he quotes in the footnote in the name of the Marcheshes. He says, Maduah Hutzucha Gemara Lilmod Zolzbik Zer Shoven HaMikra B'chesed V'yemes Yichu Par Avon. Oh no, I'm sorry, that's a different question. So first, let's take a look at the Iye Hayam. I don't have access to the Sefer. He quotes the Iye Hayam here. He says that the word emes, which again, what, that was the source for Torah, is applicable to Torah because emes is something that's eternal, and so too the Torah is eternal. Truth is something that indicates that it doesn't change, it's always there. And so too, the Torah itself is eternal and it doesn't change. The Gemara quotes the pasuk Emes Knevi Al Timkar Shekein B'Shar Kinyoni Olam Li'itim Yarashi Yikne Adam Chefetz B'Shashu Nitzach Lo Achli Achmikan Shina Itim V'Azmana Shuvei Nitzach Lo Mochro. Person purchases an object, he thinks he needs it, but with the passage of time he no longer has any use for it, so he puts it up on eBay and he sells it. Aval Torah, it says, Al Timkar, meaning the Torah has no change. It's always something valuable. You should always desire more and more Torah, to be kone Torah, and never to sell it, and never to forego it and forfeit it. So that's one important point here in the sugya about the pasuk the Al Timkar, which describes the emes of Torah as something that's eternal, always significant, always meaningful. It should never be sold. It should never be chucked away. But number two, why did the Gemara have to bring the pasuk of Yirmiyah Mishalim Ovan Ovas Al Bonim? What about the pasuk in Shmos in Parshas Yisro? It says Poked Ovan Ovas Al Bonim. Says the Marsha that as far as the Torah is concerned, we could derive the conclusion that children will die because of their avos. But we do not have rights, we don't have the ability to derive from the Torah that the father, that the parents will achieve a complete kapara. For that we need the pasuk in Yirmiyah. Because the pasuk in Yirmiyah says, Mishalem avon avos. And Mishalem, the word Mishalem, says the Marsha, means that the father achieves kapara by paying back his debts, meaning every sin engenders a chiyuv. It's like when I borrow money from you, I have to pay you back. In the case of a man's guf and nefesh, when he violates the will of God, he forfeits his rights to his nefesh, to his guf, because he embezzles his guf and he violates the terms of the contract. Now he has to pay back a chov. How does he pay back the chov? Is the pasuk says, "Umeshalem avon avos el chek b'neihem," meaning when the children die, that's when the parents can be meshalem; they can pay up their chov. So that's the advantage of the pasuk in Yirmiyah above and beyond the pasuk in the Torah. The pasuk in the Torah tells me that indeed the children die as a result of their parents' sins, but the pasuk in the Torah does not tell me that the parents will thereby achieve kapara. That we derive from this pasuk, umeshalim. The key word is umeshalim. That's the presentation of the Marsha. But now we want to ask a different question. And that is, why does the Gemara feel compelled to introduce the Gzeira Shava and go back to the pasuk in Mishle of Chesed V'Emes Yichup Aravon? Why not just derive it from the pasuk in Yirmiyah? Gleich, as we say, straight away. And he answers, in the name of the Marcheshes, that the advantage of the Gzeira Shava is that to teach us she'ein miskaprim avonosav shel adam b'misas habanim levada, he says that the, and this again reflects the shita that we mentioned, that it's that one of the other of the three are independently insufficient. We need the combination of the three. In other words, what we want to do is we want to take misas haben and kover es bonav and plug it back into the pasuk of Chesed V'Emes Yichup Aravon, and this is going to establish that if he has A plus B plus C, he has Osek HaTorah, plus he has Gemilus Chasodin, plus he has Kover Es Meso, then the combination of all three will engender Kapara, but not Misas Bonav alone. But as we indicated before, that approach is not universally accepted. And according to many opinions, you don't need all three. That's the Marcheshes' opinion. But other opinions would have it, and this we'll see in the Sefer Sifsei Chachamim, which Avi so kindly gave me as a gift, that even Kvuras Bonav without Torah and Gemilus Chasodim alone will engender a Kapara. So then we come back to the question, why does the Gemara feel compelled to go back to the pasuk in Mishlei through this Gezeirah Shavah and not rely on the pasuk in Yirmiyah alone? I'm not sure I can answer that question, but we'll take a shot at it. The Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, in his Imrei Noam, says the following: Min haMikra shebeSefer Yirmiyah Dayin Einon Yodim Shavos Miskaprim Legamrei B'Misas B'neihem. True, the pasuk says umeshalem avonavos, but we don't know that it's a complete kapara. Lefichach hitzricha hagzeres shavu lamdenu shekshem shebechesed emes yichup aravon legamrei. Just as chesed v'emes is a complete kapara for all of one's sins, yichup aravon means a total wiping out of all of our sins. Kach gam b'misas habonim, because the gzeir shov of avon avon mechapers legamrei, that means a total kapara for all his sins. So let's just summarize what we've seen. We have two answers, two approaches to understand why Reb Shimon bar Yochai was not happy with the pasuk in Yirmiyah alone, but rather uses the pasuk in Yirmiyah as a gzeir shov to plug this back into the pasuk in Mishlei. Why not derive it from the pasuk in Yirmiyah alone? One answer is that you might come to the mistaken impression, the mistaken conclusion, that Kvuras Bonav alone independently would engender Kapara by plugging it back into the pasuk in Mishlei. We derive that no, it's got to be accompanied by Esek HaTorah and Gemilus Chasodim. And the other approach is that Enochinami, Kvuras Bonav alone would be mechaper, independent of the other two, but we need to know that that kapara is so far-reaching that it's absolute, and it includes all others. That we can only derive through the Gzeirah Shavah to equate it with Chesed V'Emes. In the Ein Raya, he has a piece, again, I would photocopy it for you, but the photocopy machine, as usual, I say, is on the blink. So let's see what I have here that I can give you. This is number Lamed Gimel on page 17. So I have the original, I have one copy here and one copy here.
Right, you gave it to us.
I gave you 17? Page 17? Oh, that's great news. Wow. I'm excited. Guys, do you have 17? If not, I have two more copies if you don't have it. Here. Okay. That's very good because we'll need this for Lamed Dalet as well, but let's start with Lamed Gimel. And Rav Kook, in his Ein Raya, I say this is so beautiful and so typical of Rav Kook. He divides up the nefesh of a person into various component parts. We've seen this over and over again, this methodology. And in this case, he says that there are three parts of the nefesh, and they each have their particular area of, shall we say, maisa of avodas Hashem. Number one is the seichel, the intellect of a person that controls the person's actions. Number two is the physical goof of a person, which means the maisim. And finally, the hergesh, which is the emotional element or component in man. And he says that all three together operate to facilitate man's ability to achieve shlemus. Shlemus means perfection. Or, in the opposite way, if man misuses these three elements, these three components and faculties, then it leads to chisaron, to deficiency. And all these three, the seichel and the mice and the hergesh, can therefore either bring him to shlemus, or, heaven forbid, the opposite. And he says that if a person is lacking in these three areas, then his kapara will require that he go to the other extreme relative to each three. Respective, I should say, to each three. Each three respectively will require that he sort of tip the scale in a more extreme way. So for example, if he sins with his seichel, meaning he has the wrong thoughts or the wrong beliefs, or he doesn't use his seichel to its full capacity, we spoke about Bittul Torah, then his kapara will be to exceed and exaggerate in his Esek HaTorah, meaning to go beyond what he normally would do in terms of directing his energies towards the study of Torah. If, on the other hand, his sin is with Maisim, he didn't do the actions properly, then his rectification will be Gemilus Chasadim. Again, he's going to have to exceed, right, and tip the balance to make up by doing an excess of Gemilus Chasadim. He says, but when we get to the third element, the third faculty of man, and that is Hergesh, that becomes very, very difficult. It's kashal is kaper. The rectification process here is very difficult. And the reason for that is because hergesh is something that always has to be disciplined, always has to be controlled. If one's regesh, if his emotions get too carried away, he says that's very, very bad. And that's what this Gemara is all about. The Gemara says, and that's what Rabbi Yochanan says, Bishleim, I understand very well that Esek HaTorah is going to be the remedy for sins of the Seichel, for deficiencies of the intellect. And Rav Kukia quotes a Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah that says, Ragil Likros Daf Echad, if a person usually learns one daf, is Yikra Shnei Dapin. He should double his daily dosage of Torah. V'chein b'masim. If a person is derelict in his actions, Yarva Mitztaku Maisim Tov Merubim, he should exceed with an excess of Gemilus Chasodim and Tztaka. But here, moving on to the left column, when it comes to Hergesh, he says Hergesh is only good, it's only a positive thing if it's Mechuyav b'midasa. B'midasa means according to its measure. It's got to be circumscribed. You can't overdo it. But if Yosef b'midasa, if he exceeds too much hergesh, he says, Eino Maila. That's not going to lead him to achieve a higher level or more perfection. On the contrary, olaziko, it's dangerous. So what's he going to do? He doesn't know how to rectify the deficiencies in regesh. If he is misused or misdirected his hergeshim, he gets emotional about things that he shouldn't be getting emotional about. He gets passionate about things that he shouldn't. So what's he going to do? He's going to add passion to passion? That's not going to rectify. Ein takana b'harbos haregesh. Afilu tov. Even if he thinks, you know, he's exceeding in his hargashos for things that are good, no, a person's regesh, the olam regesh, should be curtailed, should be disciplined. Al kain, therefore, and that's the chiddush of this gemara, is yechupar b'misas banim lo aleinu shutzar hargeshi hayos yotzim lo aleinu. He says the most difficult anguish that a person could possibly experience in his life is the loss of children, Rachmana Litzlan. And he says that that's going to, in a sense, downplay his regesh. It's going to, instead of increasing his positive excitement and passion, it's going to cause him to whittle down, to curtail his passion. How then does he achieve kapara? And here Rav Kook says something amazing, which I, frankly, it's way beyond my my radar screen. But for anyone who could relate to this, he says, you know what a person's responsibility is with regard to children? Is yaskim bilavavo. His emotional source, you know, the root of his emotions, which is lev, should be absolutely directed towards kol hargashoso. All his natural love for his children should be directed rak, for only one purpose, leman kvod shemo yizbarach, for the sake of the glory of Hashem. I don't love my children simply as an end unto itself, but I love my children because they will increase the glory of God in this world. This reminds me of halacha. Do you know which halacha this reminds me of? In the Beis HaKnesses? Anyone guess what I have in mind?
About two people being called up or related.
No, about not kissing your son in shul.
Right.
Did you know that?
Right.
Again, I'm not posketing for you, but you should research it. It's problematic. I don't even know if you're allowed to kiss your grandchildren either in a shul.
Okay.
Because the shul is meant to be the place for laharbos kvod shamayim. And if you kiss your child, it almost indicates that your love for your child is greater, exceeds beyond the love for God. Again, it's a minhag. I'm not saying, you know, but just to understand the symbol of it. He says, Nira, it appears to me that this is the proper kapara for all the sins of hergesh. When we can direct all our natural emotional love towards our children and redirect it towards kvod shamayim, that's going to be the way in which we subjugate our natural hergesh for the sake of kvod shamayim. Ve'al zeh nemar, and he quotes the pasuk at the end of Chumash, v'chaisa v'ravisa, that somehow that's going to cause spiritual, eternal life when you are totally dedicated, and it's the most supreme thing in your priority list, on the top of your list, is leman kvod shemo yizbarach. Right? You know, Rav Chaim Volozh is very famous for saying that a person should always repeat in his mind, I don't know, he doesn't have to verbalize it, ein od milvado. You know, nothing else exists besides Hashem. I think this last three lines in this presentation is very much a reflection of that hashkafa, that the first and primary thing in my life is Yichud Hashem Yisbarach, is Kvod Shamayim. That's why I was here, Kol Shebrasi, L'Kvodi Barasi, and that's my ultimate purpose and my goal in life. Okay, so we can put this on the side for a moment and get back to the Gemara. Om Rabbi Yochanan says that Negayim Ubanim Einam Yisurim Shal Ava. He says the following, and this is going to be the subject of most of our discussion today. There are two types, two categories of Yisurim. One category is Yisurim She'enam Shal Ava, the other is Yisurim Shal Ava. And for some reason, in Rabbi Yochanan's mind, it's very critical that we know when we experience Rachmana Litzlan Yisurim, we know how to classify those Yisurim. What's the nature of these Yisurim? It's very important for us to know. And he's going to give us Simanim to allow us to identify the Yisurim and classify them. Am I suffering because of Yisurim, or am I suffering because of Ava? And for some reason, that's critical. So we have to answer that question. Why is it on the top priority of Rabbi Yochanan's list here that we know how to classify Yisurim? And Rabbi Yochanan tells us the following: Negayim ubanim einam Yisurim shel Ava. If a person suffers anguish and sometimes even humiliation as a result of Negayim. Negayim, again, this is not for us now, but they fall into four different categories of the Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Negayim. Number one, we have Baheres. And number two, we have... what else do we have? We have... we have Se'es. I think I skipped one. Just one second, let me go through this. I think he quotes it here. Let me just see. Oh yeah, here. Footnote number Zion. He says, the Mishnah says in the beginning of Negayim, or here he has it, Maros Negayim Shnayim Shein Arba. In other words, there are two Avos, and each one has a Tolda. So there are all told four types of phenomenon, call it dermatological phenomenon, although most Rishonim hold they're not biological, but whatever they are, they appear on the skin. And what are they? Baheres, and then we have Se'es. Those are the two Avos. The Tolda of Baheres is Kisid HaHechel. Baheres means it's absolutely white, like shining snow. And Sid is plaster, that's a little bit less white. Se'es is Kikrum Beitza, it's a kind of color that looks like the membrane that surrounds the egg. And Shniel on its Tolda is Kitzemer Lava, like white wool that is taken off the back of a sheep. Okay, but in any event, these are various dermatological manifestations of Negayim. And what is the most profound punishment, so to speak? I shouldn't use that word, but halachic response to Negayim. What happens to a person who's determined to have tzaras?
Sent down the suicide.
Exactly. That's called shiluach miyamachna. That really is what we call social alienation. That we alienate him in a sense and we send him out. And many mefarshim say that that's because of the contagious nature of his malady. But the Ramban objects to that because the Ramban says that it's not contagious, it's not even biological. It's something metaphysical.
So why is he sent out?
Oh, so why is he sent out?
Because the Ramban.
The Ramban holds that the sins that bring about this metaphysical phenomenon of Negayim, of Negei Aguf, are sins that alienate man from man. And therefore, it's Mida Keneged Mida that he too should have a Richuk from the Machna. Now, I just want to add one point here. Richuk from Machna Yisrael, from Machna Kadosh, means two things. It means alienation from society, but it also means alienation from Hashem. Because a Makom Kadosh, by definition, that's what Kedusha means, is a place where the Shechina is, a place where we feel a close, intimate proximity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says Rabbi Yochanan, this is not Yisurim Shel Ava. When a person suffers this malady, and as a result we push him away from Hashem and away from a man, that cannot be Yisurim Shel Ava. And number two, and this is more complicated, he says, Ubanim. Okay, so the Gemara is going to point out that, what do you mean Ubanim? We just finished saying that Banim is a Mechaper. Okay, maybe it's a mechaper, but it's not Yisurim Shel Ava. And the question is why? So before we answer the question why, the Gemara posits a stira, a brisa that contradicts this very statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Negayim lo? Negayim is not Yisurim Shel Ava? Vasanya? Doesn't the brisa say, Kol Misha Yeshbo Echad Mi Arba Maros Negayim Alolu Eno Ela Enom Ela Mizbeach Kapara? That when HaKadosh Baruch Hu smites you with these negayim, you should know that that's for the sake of kapara. You become a mizbeach kapara. In other words, the conclusion I should derive here is that these are Yisurim Shalav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is granting you the opportunity through these negayim to achieve kapara. Isn't that great? I mean, isn't that out of Ava? God has compassion and love?
I know that's Ava.
Oh. So the Mefarshim go to town here. What does the Gemara mean here when they assume, based on this Braisa, that this is Yisurim Shel Ava? On the contrary, what's the fundamental difference between Yisurim Shel Ava and Yisurim She'enim Shel Ava? In which one is which?
For Ava, there's no sin involved.
Correct. And who says this? Take a look again. Let's review Rashi on the Hayam and Aleph. Rashi says, on the left side, you have Rashi, Hayam and Aleph, on the right side and the left side. On the left side, about 10 lines down, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Miyasra, what's Yisum Shalava? Biolam Azeh, Beloshum Avon. In other words, it's not Kapara for Avonos. Kedei Laharbos, Scharo Biolam Abba Yosef, Kedei Sugu Yosef. And if you recall, we discussed the Pnei Yeshua's two interpretations of Yisurim Shel Ava. Either Yisurim Shel Ava, he says, is mizakech es ha-nefesh, somehow it purifies and refines the soul, or alternatively, Yisurim Shel Ava will give a person the opportunity to give his Yisurim to others, meaning that others will achieve kapara and they'll be spared and saved because of his magnanimous kabbalas Yisurim Shel Ava, and as a quid pro quo reward for being so magnanimous and being willing to suffer Yisurim Shel Ava, he gets additional schar above and beyond his own personal schuyot. If this be the case, it's clear according to Rashi in any event that there's a fundamental difference between Yisurim as a kaparas avonos and Yisurim as Yisurim shel ava when there were no avonos. And from Rabbi Yochanan's point of view, it's very important, it's crucial that a person who suffers Yisurim know how to identify the source and the nature of these Yisurim. If these Yisurim are coming for kaparas avonos, then it's a symbol, it's a sign to man that he has to do tshuva. And in the classical case of Negoim, that's exactly what Negoim is all about. It's a message to a person metaphysically that Hashem's telling him, wake up. It's a wake-up call. Right? Uri Yesheni Mishnaskim, it's time to do tshuva. That's not Yisurim Shel Ava. The Braisa says that Negoim are Mizbeah Kapora. What does that have to do with Yisurim Shel Ava? That has to do with Yisurim Shel Kapora for Averos. And basically, that's the Gemara's answer. But again, we want to understand the Gemara's Havamina here. The Gemara answers, Mizbach Kapara Havu. Enochinami, you're right. And the Bryce is correct. And the purpose of the Goyim is a Kapara for Avonos. But Yisurim Shel Ava, Lo Avu, but it's not Yisurim Shel Ava. So what was the Gemara thinking in the Havamina? And this is the Kash of the Ein Yaakov, the name of the Riaf. If it's a mizbeach kapara, if it's to be mechaper of his avonis, then by definition it's not Yisurim Shel Ava. So what was Gemara thinking? And he gives a very interesting answer. He says that vada Yisurim Shel Ava einam boim lechaper avonos. However, in boim lechaper al acherim. The concept of Mizbeach Kapara in the Havamina is that this experience of suffering Yisurim Shel Ava becomes a Kapara, Mizbeach Kapara, but not for the tzaddik himself who's completely guiltless, who's receiving the blows, but rather for others. And therefore, the concept of Mizbeach Kapara is not contradictory to Yisurim Shel Ava. Fine. And this really reflects the second approach of the Pnei Yoshua. Because again, if you remember, the second approach of the Pnei Yoshua was that Yisurim Shel Ava served the function of helping others. So the Gemara and the Havamina thought that Negoim served the function of being a kapara on behalf of others, to be mechaper on Klal Yisrael, on Acherim, and that is exactly the goal, according to the Pnei Yeshua's second approach, of Yisurim Shel Ava. But the Gemara says, nay, that's not what the Braisa has in mind, but rather the Braisa has in mind, it's a Mizbeach Kapar for whom? for the individual who suffers, the negayim, he is the one who needs kapara, and therefore you should know that the primary purpose of negayim is not yisurim shel ava, and we have to understand how we know this. Again, since the concept of Mizbeach Kapara could be interpreted two ways, and it lends itself to be interpreted as Yisurim Shel Ava, how do we know that Negayim, how does Rabbi Yochanan know that Negayim is not possibly Yisurim Shel Ava? And for that, we'll have to see the next piece of Gemara. So the Gemara says the following. Ibayis Ema Halon V'Halahu. Okay. Now this piece of Gemara, I think, is going to shed light on the question that we asked before. How does Rabbi Yochanan know that Negayim is kapara for the Mitzora and not Yisurim Shel Ava on behalf of others? So the second answer, I think, will shed light on the previous answer. Halon Halahu. Now here, Rabosai, take a look at Rashi, but it's a little bit tricky. Halon v'halahu be Eretz Yisrael. You see that three lines down from the top. So what do those words mean, be Eretz Yisrael? Is that Rashi's interpretation of halon? Or is that Rashi's interpretation of halahu? Mm-hmm. It's very tricky.
It's Tam Bali, isn't it? We always assume that us...
Right.
Is in Babel.
Correct. So if you look in the Ein Yaakov, he doesn't have Halon. He just has in Rashi Halahu, which really clarifies this Rashi. Halon is referring to Bavel. And when Rashi says Be'eretz Yisrael, he's not interpreting Halon, he's interpreting Halahu. For those guys in Eretz Yisrael, like Rabbi Yochanan. Says Rashi, in Eretz Yisrael, it's impossible that these Yisurim are Yisurim Shel Av. Why is it impossible? He says, Sha'arei Choma Mekudoshos Ba, walled cities are sanctified, they have a sanctity in Eretz Yisrael. Again, we're talking about walled cities from the time of Yoshua bin Nun. And how does that Kiddusha, how does that the sanctified status of an ear mukefes choma express itself? Mitzora ton shiluach chutza lahen. To the same extent that Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, does not tolerate Mitzorayim, so too that sanctity identically applies to batei ori choma, to cities that are a choma that are walled, and that expresses itself in the fact that the mitzora has to be sent away, has to be sent outside. Says Rashi, Einam Yisurim Shalav. Yisurim Shalava are antithetical to Shiluach Michutz L'machna, because Shiluach Michutz L'machna is a clear indication that a person is guilty of sin, that a person was marching himself from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he created enmity amongst Jews. Bavel? That's a different story. She'ein te'unim shiluach? There's no din of kedushas arim in Bavel in Chutz Laretz. And therefore, there's no din of shiluach in the Mitzora case. You could say, therefore, that this is not humiliating to the Mitzora. We're not sending him anywhere. He remains in society. Ve'hein mizbeach kapora davi yisurim shalava. And then in Chinami, the way you interpreted Mizbeach Kapara in the Hava Mina, namely, that it contradicts Rabbi Yochanan, because it's a Kapara for others, meaning it's Yisurim Shel Ava, that interpretation we can accept, but only with regard to Bnei Bavel, where there's no sanctity to the cities of Bavel, Negoyim do not engender the halacha of Shiluach Chutz L'machne, Chutz L'ir, and therefore the Negayim can be interpreted as Yisurim Shel Ava. Your original pshat, your original understanding in the Hava Mina of Mizbeach Kapara is absolutely correct.
What happened to Mizbeach Kapara in Bavel? How does that work out?
Mizbeach Kapara means that if a tzaddik suffers from these four negoim, any of these four negoim, and he accepts it bi'ava, he now engenders a kapara, a mizbeach kapara for Klal Yisrael, but only in Bavel. However, if a tzaddik is in Eretz Yisrael, then the reason why in Eretz Yisrael he's suffering negoim, says Rabbi Yochanan, is because of Yisurim, but not Yisurim Shalava. He himself needs a kapara, because the excruciating experience, and especially on a spiritual level, of Shiluach Min HaMachna, which applies in Eretz Yisrael, is definitely indicative of the fact that this individual needs a kapara for his averos, and therefore cannot be Yisurim Shal Ava. So Halahu in Rashi means Eretz Yisrael, because in Eretz Yisrael these are not Negoim, these Negoim are not Yisurim Shal Ava. But take a look at Tosus. Tosus doesn't like Rashi.
I thought there were only these Negoim in Eretz Yisrael.
Right. It could be, you're right, that Negoim in Chutzlarts are not metaphysical, but they're simply dermatological.
Yeah.
Meaning, if you have your local dermatologist, I don't know, do you gentlemen have a dermatologist that you recommend?
Yeah,
okay.
You have a coin, right?
Wow, that's cool. Okay. We don't need him in Chutzlatz. In Chutzlatz, we need a darn good dermatologist, you know. Especially for someone who's suffering from these phenomena, these manifestations of leprosy.
I thought it was only the Kedushas of Eretz Yisrael that actually brings them on.
Right. So I think in Chutzlatz, what we're talking about is Negoim, for which you need a good dermatologist. Okay, I have someone to recommend. He's a special guy.
Where, in America?
No, in Har Nof.
Oh, I see.
But he travels from time to time to America. In any event, so Tosus doesn't like Rashi's pshat. Tosus says, "Pirush Rashi b'nei Eretz Yisrael shetzrichim shiluach chutzal shalosh machnas lo avi yisun shavetema the shiluach machnas lo hi noeg el bezman shayovil noeg." He says the whole discussion about Shiluach Machnas is irrelevant to Rabbi Yochanan in his historical context. Because the din of Shiluach Machnas in Bariyat Chomo depends upon Yovel. At the time of Rabbi Yochanan, Yovel had long ceased to exist. B'mei Amoroim lo'ayah Yovel Noeg, even in Eretz Yisrael there was no Yovel. At the time of Rabbi Yochanan, he proves it from a Gemara in Gittin. So how could it be that Rabbi Yochanan is talking about something that's irrelevant during his lifetime? He's describing the Goyim as a divine punishment for sin. It's not Yisurim Shalava. And he's differentiating between his situation in Eretz Yisrael and the situation of the Tan of the Braisa in Bavel. The Tan of the Braisa in Bavel could classify, says Rabbi Yochanan, Negoim as what? As Yisurim Shalava, because he's in Bavel. But I'm in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore what I'm experiencing here, or someone else, has got to be classical Yisurim Shal Kapara for Avonos. Why? Because in Eretz Yisrael, you've got the problem of Shiluach min HaMachnin Batei Arichoma. In Chutz Laretz, you don't have such an issue. And therefore, in Bavel, says Rabbi Yochanan, you don't have Shiluach min HaMachnin Batei Arichoma, and therefore it's Yisurim Shalava. What's going on over here? But Rabbi Yochanan didn't even experience, it wasn't on his radar screen, Shiluach min HaMachnin. There was no Kedushas Batei Arichoma because there was no Yovel. And based on this, Kasha, Tosus completely changes the pshat in the Gemara. So before we see Tosus' pshat, let's just mention a couple of answers to defend Rashi. There are three answers here to defend Rashi. The first one comes from the Maral Miprag. Maral Miprag says that even though there's no Shiluach min HaMachna in Eretz Yisrael, at the time when Yovel terminates, at the time of Rabbi Yochanan, nevertheless, he is royal with Shiluach min HaMachna. In other words, we're not saying something about the actual performance or implementation of Shiluach min HaMachna. We're saying something about the nature of the Negoim. And the Negoim themselves still remain the same identical Negoim which established that a person is royal shiluch min hamachna, which means that if Yovel will be reinstated, then immediately we'll have to send him out of the machna.
What kind of kapara could it be if there's no actual shiluach?
No, again, shiluach is not a kapara. Shiluach is an indication in Eretz Yisrael that it's Yisurim shel Ava, meaning, no, I'm sorry, in Eretz Yisrael that it's not Yisurim shel Ava, right? No, the physical suffering that he has, or the fact that they throw him out because he's contagious, you know, now he's really contagious, is that itself is Yisurim, is Mechaper, it's not Yisurim shel Ava. And the Maral says because the kind of, the quality, so to speak, of the Goyim that he's suffering is Roy L'Shiluach Min Hamach. The Rashba here in Brachos offers another defense for Rashi, and he says that when the Gemara establishes in Gittin that Batei Ari Choma depend upon Yovel, that's only as far as the halacha of Mechira is concerned. If I sell you a piece of land in a walled city that I have rights within 12 months to redeem that land from the buyer, that halach is suspended because there's no yovel. However, the halach of shiluach mitzoroi michutz l'machne, says the Rashba, the name of Rabbi Chanan, applies even now, even despite the termination of yovel. Why? Because we paskin that kedusha rishona, kedusha l'shaita v'kidusha l'asid lava. And the same identical kedusha of Batei Arichom with regard to Shiluch Mitzorayim applies even after the Churban, because Kidshal Shaita and Kidshal Asid Lava. And finally, the third defense of Rashi is that Tzlach holds that what Rabbi Yochan is referring to is not Batei Arichom, but rather Yushalayim. And since the entire Eretz Yisrael is influenced by Yerushalayim, meaning, what is the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael? The Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, my Rebbe used to say, is the extension and the expansion of the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. He says that since Yerushalayim and its sanctity does not depend upon Yovel, and therefore in Yerushalayim itself, the din of Shiluach Mitzorayim still applies even after the termination of Yovel, post-Yovel, so too, the halach of Shiluach Mitzorayim in the rest of Eretz Yisrael will apply only because of the extension of Yerushalayim. Anyway, there are many, many different ways of interpreting and defending Rashi. What does Tosfos say? The Yesh Mefarshim. This is going to boggle the mind. I don't know what to do with this, but I'll just read it to you. Yesh Mefarshim Halon V'Halahu Le'inyan Tuma Shenizharim Be'Eretz Yisrael V'Lo Be'Bavel. Tosfos has a premise here, which I don't know where he got it from, that in Eretz Yisrael we are Nizar and Tuma. That means we have to be very careful that our goof should be tahar.
Maybe it means, because it says in Kutzlar, it's the whole land is tahar. So maybe it's impossible to be so zahir on Tuma.
But again, what's the source for the fact that Eretz Yisrael, in fact, the Marsha points out that if you open up a Gemara, let's see if we can figure out where the Gemara is. Anyway, the Gemara says that in many places, and he doesn't tell you exactly where, that at the time of the Amoraim, they were no longer Nizar in Tuma, even in Eretz Yisrael. So all this, you know, being picky about, you know, not going into a cemetery and all this, no longer applies, even in Eretz Yisrael. So where does Tosfos come up with this source? I don't see anyone defending Tosfos that in Eretz Yisrael they were Nizar al Atuma. But in any event, the basic punchline of Tosfos is that since in Eretz Yisrael they were careful about Tuma, that goof was Betara, therefore it would not be Surim Shal Ava for a person to experience Tuma in Eretz Yisrael. That's Halahu. And finally, the Gemara has a third answer. The Brisa that classifies Negoim as Yisurim Shal Ava is talking about Yisurim Negoim Bitsina. The anguish of a person is in private. And that could be Yisurim Shal Ava. But Rabbi Yochanan is talking about Farhesia. And if it's public, it's absolutely humiliating. You know, they talk about Rav Aryeh Levin, Zichron Levach, that he used to visit the Mitzrayim here in Yerushalayim. You remember that? I mean, that was an unbelievable tzidkus on his part. But generally speaking, for a person to be a leper in public, that is so humiliating that it cannot be Yisurim Shel Ava. The premise here is that Yisurim Shel Ava is something that's very private in the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the tzaddik. You know, it's not something that the tzaddik wants to, you know, publicize or should be, or something that should be public knowledge. Now Rabbi Yochanan asks another question. He says, what are you telling me? Now the Gemara asks another question against Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, Banim is not Yisurim shall Ava. Why is that so? So the Gemara says there are two cases of Banim. Banim lo, Hechi dami. What exactly is your case, Rabbi Yochanan, that you say it's not Yisurim shall Ava? Elam, if it's a case, the Havlu Umesu, Rachman al-Litzani, he had children that died. How could that be that's not Yisurim Shel Ava? For Amar Rabbi Yochanan himself said, Dein Garma Da Asira Bir. So again, before we go into the details of what Rabbi Yochanan said and what he did, the bottom line is, we're not translating this Gemara literally yet, that Rabbi Yochanan buried 10 children. And Rabbi Yochanan was a great tzaddik. So if there's anyone on the face of the earth during all of Jewish history who could claim that the death of children is definitely Yisurim Shel Ava, it's Rabbi Yochanan himself. How could Rabbi Yochanan say that Banim is not Yisurim Shel Ava? He himself suffered Yisurim Shel Ava with the death and the burial of 10 of his children. Ella says the Gemara, again we're going to come back to the previous line in just a minute, Hadalo Havile Klal for Hada Havile Umes. There are two cases. There's the case of a person who never had children, and there's the case of a person who lost children. He had children and they died. Rabbi Yochanan fits in the second category. And surely Rabbi Yochanan would recognize and acknowledge that such Yisurim are Yisurim Shel Ava. However, in the case of someone who never had children before, that fits into the case or the category of Negoyim, it cannot be Yisurim Shel Ava because he never had children to begin with. So Rabosai, let's try to address two questions, two problems in this Gemara. Problem number one, how does the Gemara know that Rabbi Yochanan suffered Yisurim Shel Ava with the death of his 10 children? What does the Gemara mean when it says Dein Garma Da Asira Bir? And question number two is, why does the Gemara assume, and the Gemara is absolutely convinced, that a person who never had children before is not like a person who buried his children, and his suffering cannot be identified as Yisurim Shel Ava? Those are the two questions that we want to answer. So on the first question, there's a machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi says, Bir, if you take a look, it's about 10 lines down from the top. Kamo Bar. It's another form of the Aramaic word Bar, which means a son. And what did Rabbi Yochanan do? Vitzar, tzar means when you take something and you roll it in a kerchief. Etzem, a bone, from his 10th son. He actually had a bone of his 10th son, which he wrapped up in a sudar. Sudar is a kerchief. And now Rashi adds three words. Pachos mikisaora mimenu. From this bone, Rabbi Yochanan took a small, I don't know if I can use the word a splinter, I don't know what word to use, but a small piece of the bone, and it was smaller than a saora.
Than a barley seed?
A barley kernel.
Right, than a barley kernel. And the halacha is that tumas. Now Rashi, and this is what all the mafarshim. This is not my chiddush. The mafarshim say that Rashi is trying to answer a basic problem here. How could Rabbi Yochanan be walking around with a bone of a deceased child when the halacha is that a bone, as any other part of the human body after death, is mitami tumis negoyim. I'm sorry, tumis mess. Okay, if they weren't nisharim in tumis mess, that's one thing. But to walk around with a bone, I mean, you know, you're not allowed to be mitami yourself. You know, actively, you don't have to be so careful, but you don't have to be mitami yourself. And certainly to walk into a room or an oel mess with a kohen is not allowed to be mitami himself, even bisman hazeh. So Rashi's answer to this question is that the etzem that he walked around with was pachos mikasaora, and the minimum shear of an etzem that's mitami mes is kisaora. Less than a saora is not mitami mes. So that's the way Rashi interprets this garma. Garma means this etzem. The Aruch, Rav Nosson Bal Aruch, he was from the Gaonim, or at least the late Gaonim, early Rishonim, before Rashi, he says that this etzem, this garma, was a tooth, a shein. And shein ames eina mitames ela kshi mechuberes begufa. Okay, we have to learn Masechta Olos for this. But according to the Aruch, he did not walk around with a bone, but he walked around with a tooth. And once a tooth is disconnected from its body, its tlusha, it's no longer mitame. But the most fascinating pshat and the most revolutionary pshat is the Rav Yoh. The Rav Yoh is one of the Bali Atosvis, who's becoming a lot more popular lately. People are studying his works in depth. He writes that Dein Garma Lasiri Bar, he says, no. Rabbi Yochanan was not walking around with a part of the body of his son that has to be buried. Oh no, no way, no how. But rather, he says the word beer is not the same as the word bar. And he disagrees with Rashi. Beer, he says, is from the language of Havra. Havra means that after a relative comes back from the cemetery, having buried one of his relatives, he is served a suda, a special meal, which is called the suda savra. It has to be prepared by others, by neighbors and so forth. They bring him this suda. And that's the kickoff of avelus, meaning that's the first thing he does, the avel, when he comes into the base avel. So what did Rabbi Yochanan take from the beer? What did he take from this suda? After he sat, when he sat Shiva for his 10th son, he took an etzem from the animal that they served him. You know, they shechted an animal, they served him meat, because the suda savra has to be fleishik, has to be meat. And that indicates the transition between aninus and avelus, because as an owner, he's not allowed to eat meat, but now he can eat meat. And he took a piece from that suda savra. Why was he taking a piece of a bone or a part of the animal? Why was he doing this? So if you take a look at Rashi, who learns that he took actually an etzem, but it was pachos mikasaora, Rashi says, li agmas nefesh. Now this is an amazing, I mean, this brings like tears to my eyes, because basically Rashi's saying that the mitzvah of avelus requires that a person intensify his feelings of anguish, of bereavement, of grief. How did Rabbi Yochanan intensify his grief? He walked around with a bone of his child. Again, a small piece, it wasn't a tumor problem, but it would always remind him. It was like almost, it's almost as if Rabbi Yochanan understood that avelus requires a constant, no hesek hadas. You know, there's no disconnection from the avelus. And Rashi adds that how do we know that in this case the burial of children, the loss of children, engenders a yisurim shel ava? Gavra rabba k'Rabbi Yochanan lo bo lo yisurim she'enim shel ava. It would have to be that someone like Rabbi Yochanan would have to be suffering yisurim shel ava, because he has no avonos, he doesn't need any kapara. And perhaps by adding la'agmas nefesh, Rashi is telling us how Rabbi Yochanan is suffering. He has a constant suffering that takes him through his entire life. and that suffering is on behalf of the klal of others, that's Yisurim Shel Ava, and how intense is that suffering that Rabbi Yochanan constantly had close to his heart, the Agmas Nefesh of the loss of his children. He never forgot that. He never discontinued his thinking about that. But Rashi now is implying, and this is what's going to irk Tosfos, that in the case of someone who didn't have children and suffers the anguish of being childless, and if he dies, he's what's called an ariri, that person is definitely, without a question, not a tzaddik. He's suffering yisurim she'enam shel ava. Says Tosfos, take a look for Amar, the second Tosfos, Pirish Rashi de la Adam Chashuk Rabbi Yochanan Mistamal Ohoya Li Yisurim Shel Ava Tema. The Masik the Hechdo Avi Bonim Klal. If he didn't have any children, Lo Avi Yisurim Shel Ava. That would be Yisurim of anything less than a tzaddik, someone who has averos. Fektosis, he doesn't understand. Varei Kama Tzaddikim Shel Ohoya Lehem Bonim. There are many tzaddikim who are not guilty of any sins, and they died childless. I mean, even in the course of my life, I can think of a few of the greats of the previous generation. I'm sure you're thinking of them, who died without children. So according to Rashi, if you die without children, the way Rashi reads this Gemara, ipso facto, it must mean that you're not a tzaddik. And Tosfos says that there are tzaddikim that we know of, we can testify, that died without children. Is Yesh L'tmal Rashi the Matzinu Kama Anoshim Gedolim Shel Ohayelam Bonim Klal Leficha Kosva Atos Shachen Pa'amim Maybe Hakadosh Baruch Hu Tzadikim Yisurim Shenenim Shel Ava L'Rayis Hagmari Rabbi Yochanani Nimashayu Menachim Bekam Chesav Velim Al Misis Bnei'en Ilu Lo Yisurim Shel Ava Lo Menachim Bekachachim. Tosfos says that the reason why Rabbi Yochanan carried around this bone or this tooth or whatever it was is not the way Rashi learns to intensify his avelus, but on the contrary, to lighten the burden and console those who are bereaved, who lost children, or who lost relatives. He would say to them, look, and with all due respect to your suffering and your bereavement, look at me. This is what Chazal says, that sometimes misery loves company, that's chatzi nechama. If you meet someone who suffered even more intensely, I remember when I went to the Beis Avel for my friend Rav Moshe Twersky. So one of the people who came to the Beis Avel was a widow whose husband was killed by a Palestinian with a tractor. And her Nicham Avel, I remember they were keeping people away from, because she was talking, this widow was talking to Rebbetzin Twersky, to Bashi. They kept us away because they didn't want anyone to interrupt, because they felt that this was a very powerful experience of Nicham Avelim, somebody who could commensurate with the Avel. So Tosfos says that the reason why we know that the death of children is Yisurim Shel Ava is because Rabbi Yochanan took these tragedies, and it motivated him, or it projected him to a special position, a special role of Nicham Avelim. And if Rabbi Yochanan was being Menachem in the Avelim, then it must prove that they were Yisurim Shel Ava. Because the essence of Yisurim Shel Ava are suffering that you do for others. And I don't know if you've read all the articles that have been published for a long time, but especially in the last period of time, that people who suffer setbacks in life, what's the word I'm looking for? I think it starts with a D. Anyway, people who suffer setbacks in life, they should see it as an opportunity to help others. That dafka because they... Oh, adversity. No, no, I'm not saying the word right. What word am I looking for? Anybody know? Sometimes I get hung up on a word and it drives me crazy. I don't know if you have...
Adversity.
Adversity, not
adversity.
Adversity, that's it. I left out the D. Adversity. People suffer adversity in life. It's meant to put them in a unique position to help others. That's called Yisurim Shel Ava. Yeah. Okay, Rabosai? Yeah. So we have Rashi Shita and we have Tosfos Shita. Let's make a note of the fact that we're holding... Where are we holding? We're holding by the sugya of Rav Chiya Bar Abba, if you can make a note of that. And B'li Neder will pick that up on Thursday. I want to take this opportunity to wish everyone a Freilich Chanukah, a happy Chanukah.
The Seder's as normal in the mornings?
I think the morning Seder will be normal. If there's any change as far as my teaching is concerned, I'll try to let you know as soon as that becomes clear.
Famous poem written by Elwida Wilcox, which the opening two lines are, "Laugh and the world laughs with you. Cry and you cry alone. The poor old earth has need of your mirth. She has troubles enough of her own."
I didn't get the last one. Say it again, sorry.
And how would you interpret that? I mean,
what?
What is the? What would you say is the meaning of
the sorrow,
Wilcox? Is his name
the sorrow?
Yeah.
Ella Wheeler Wilcox. So it was a woman.
Wilcox, yeah.
An American poet, and she wrote.
Right. So again, so Harvey, just I don't want to go through the poem that you'll go through. But what was the pshat in the poem? What's the
pshat?
Yeah. What's the
sorrows?
Yeah.
Are best kept private.
Ah. So that's sort of antithetical to what we were saying. We were saying that a person should share his sorrows with others when need be. Oh, I'll tell you the truth. Yesh li yashiv, it's not a steer. A person should not carry their sorrows around with them and publicize them and speak about them, because that's just going to get everyone else depressed. There's no need for that. But what we're talking about in terms of Tosa's understanding of Rabbi Yochanan is that if someone is suffering from anguish and sorrow and you have, in your world experience, in your life experience, suffered from something similar, that you should share with someone else. That becomes a consolation for someone. So it's not a steer to Wilcox. I didn't want to have a steer to Wilcox. Yeah, there's one more Rashi here that I wanted to point out. Yisurin shel Ava. What do you say? You too. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Soon shall Ava Einam Bonim Lechaper Al Ovon. V'tirin shachein das Rashi shisurin abon lechaper ovon eni yisurin shal ava amnam adam shahayu lo bonim v'meisu sovel shnei min yisurin he'echad avelus v'atzar sheyesh lo v'yesh ro v'misas bonov v'asheni b'meshe nisha ariri blo bonim adam zenis kapra avonos of yisurin arishonim shenis abel v'ro v'misas bonov v'ilu yisurin ashtim shenos ariri em kvar Bichlal Yisurim Shal Ava. Vezui Kavonis Rashi Avels Mechaperes Alav Anosov. Lefisha Yisurim Sheboim Olav Od Yisurim Shal Ava. Lefisha Yisurim Aboim Olav Od Yisurim Shal Ava. Rashi says that Avelus. Where is the Rashi? Here, Dibra Maschil, Tahavale Bodav Mesim, Havale Yisum Shalav, Shalvelus Mechaperes Alav Anosov. But yet, Rashi himself on Daf Heyman Alav says that Yisum Shalav, by definition, are not a kapara. So, how do we reconcile the two? And the answer must be that in the case of Roa B'Misas Bonov, there is an element of Yisurim as Kapara, and that's what Rashi identifies here with Avelus. But then there's also the fact that he's Ariri, and that itself is included on the Yisurim Shel Ahava. What we didn't get a chance to do is the Ein Raya number Lamed Dalet and the Ein Raya number Lamed Hei. So B'li Neder will try to put that on the agenda for Yom Chamishi.